This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, and joined as always here in the early portion of the week by Adam Burke. Just a reminder, do please give us a five-star review as we continue to climb up the ratings each and every week. It's pretty cool to see us up in those iTunes top 200 rankings every single week now. And just a reminder, we're on YouTube now, youtube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast. We'll have some shorts up there as well as all three episodes each and every week. So Adam Burke here, I'm Tim Murray. Adam, very happy as his Cleveland Guardians finished off, what, the greatest comeback ever, 15 and a half games back. Never in doubt for anyone who had a Cleveland Guardians futures ticket, I'm sure, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, not only 15 and a half back, which everyone keeps harping on, but they were 11 games back on September 4th. So, I mean, you talk about making up that ground in less than 2 weeks. And then, of course, no reason for them to win on Sunday in extra innings after they saw that the Tigers had lost. And what do? Walk off three-run homer off the foul pole. So, I don't know, man. I keep calling them the team of destiny with Gil Alexander, a host of a numbers game here at VSiN, and he keeps getting really, really pissed off at me about it. So, maybe I'm just going to keep doing it.
Well, hey, if you can upset fellow hosts, it's good for content. You know, it's a good thing to do. All right, Adam, a lot to get to. Obviously, we will dive into your updated power ratings article, which you can read each and every Sunday night, Monday morning over at vsin.com. But let's start with what we saw in Happy Valley on Saturday night. And, you know, from all the hits that I did, and I even said it on Saturday morning on the tailgate show, Adam, it was, if not now, when? Like, this is the spot for Penn State to get this signature win. They've got a veteran team, everyone essentially back from a year ago. I know Tyler Warren is balling out with the Colts, and Abdul Carter, obviously, two big, big pieces that left. I recognize that. But got your quarterback back, loaded running back room. You went to the portal. You upgraded at the wide receiver position. You've got a very good defense. And then you can't get it done. You're down 17-3. You tie the game up. You lose in overtime. And now the numbers are what they are, 4-21 straight up against top 10 teams. And that includes a win last year in the college football playoff over Boise State. So when we look at this game, and I know it's very classic, sports talk radio topic, Adam, to say, was this a great win for Oregon or a terrible loss for Penn State? How do you look at this game? Is it more of a side eye at Penn State, or maybe this Oregon team we were just not high enough on heading into this year?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both, right? I mean, you know, I think it's a really bad loss for Penn State in the sense that maybe Drew Aller sucks. Like, maybe Penn State kept the wrong quarterback here. You know, I mean, Drew Aller throws for 137 yards in this game, and they needed more than that from him because Oregon made the right adjustment. They said, you know what? We are not going to let Penn State beat us on the ground. And they didn't. Penn State had 4 yards per carry. Aller actually had the longest rush of 20 yards. Like, Oregon gave up 297 yards on the ground in that Big Ten championship game. So Dan Lanning and his staff made the adjustment and said, you know what? Drew Aller is going to have to beat us. You know what Drew Aller didn't do? Beat him. So I think in that respect, you know, it's a bad loss for Penn State because this game was there for the taking with a no-show from their running game, and they still couldn't get it done. And then I think it is a good win for Oregon because it's really the first time that they've truly been tested. Remember, last year they started real slow, had that game that they almost lost at home to Idaho, struggled through, what was it, the Civil War game against Oregon State.
Almost lost to Boise.
Almost lost to Boise. Well, I guess they blew out Oregon State. That's right. I'm thinking of the Boise State game. But, like, they started real slow. This year they didn't. And then they went out on the road, their first big test, you know, first time starting quarterback in Dante Moore, and they won. I mean, was it pretty? Probably not. And my condolences to anybody who had the under in this game.
That's brutal.
But, like, they did what they wanted to do. They stopped Penn State from running the football. And I give them a lot of credit for that. And I think that it's a really good win for Oregon. And, in fact, in light of what Oregon did, they are the new number one in my power ratings. They're a half point ahead of Ohio State now, who has been at or co-favorite or co-number ones in my power ratings here. But I gave Oregon a bump. I was impressed with what they did for the most part, and I was impressed with the composure of Dante Moore.
Yeah, I think Dante Moore really popped to me in, you know, that hostile environment. I know he went to UCLA, made a couple of starts there, but clearly he made the right decision to go to Oregon, sit behind Dylan Gabriel, and, you know, it's after a win on the road. Dan Lanning's all hyped up, but, you know, he spoke glowingly of his quarterback, and as he should. I mean, that was a really impressive performance. I thought he used his legs more than I expected, just to not to look, he's not going to make big plays like Talon Green or something like that, but he's able to move the chains when needed. And DeCorian Moore is continuing to emerge as a stud at a wide receiver there for Oregon. Shocking. Oregon found another stud wide receiver. So look, the Ducks, you know, I thought they were going to be a little bit of a popular dog. And when I had Chuck Esposito on the tailgate show on Saturday, he let me know that 78% of the tickets at stations here in Vegas were on Oregon. And the number hadn't really budged, right? It got up to 4 pregame. So I thought everything kind of set up for Penn State to win this game, and they didn't get it done. And it wasn't a fluke. I know it goes to double overtime and all of that, but look, this was a 17-3 game where the right side ultimately came home. And yes, you're right, man. If you had under in this game, that's as gross as a beat as maybe not as bad as the Rams game last weekend, but or the Rams game this weekend, depending on if you had the Colts as well. But that's a tough one to swallow. And now Oregon gets a bye week, Adam. And then next week they bring in Cignetti in Indiana. So big stretch here for Oregon. And then after that, I mean, if they don't make the playoff now, essentially, and I looked at the adjusted odds for them to make the playoff, Oregon's at minus 1,800. They can lose to Indiana in 2 weeks and still make it in. If they beat Indiana, they're a lock. I mean, they are not going to mess it up. So it seems pretty likely that Oregon will be back in the college football playoff. And this was of the big three, Adam, coming into this year, Ohio State, Penn State, and Oregon in the Big Ten. This was the team that I had some questions and reservations about with all the pieces that left from a year ago. They lose Tez Johnson to an injury, and Dan Lanning continues to impress, man. And I think the point that you made is very valid. You know, they absolutely hammer Oklahoma State. They crush their arch rival in Oregon State. And now you go on the road to one of the most hostile environments in college football, a whiteout at Penn State, where Penn State has been great against the spread, great winning outright, and you win a game on the road. That was really, really impressive to see.
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, I mean, I think, and look, I mean, I full disclosure, I was on Oregon, you know, +3.5 from earlier in the week. And the big thing to me, I like Dan Lanning, right? And, you know, I actually watched football with Femi Abefefe and Elliot Bowman, who used to work for us here at VSiN. Of course, Femi, on You Better, You Bet now. And, you know, as this game was playing out, we were kind of talking about it, right? Like, the whole thought, the prevailing thought coming into this game, and it was my prevailing thought too, is how does James Franklin fuck this up? Like, is it in the fourth quarter? Does he make some stupid special teams decision and try to go for an onside kick or something like that? Like, what does he do to hurt his team's chances of winning this football game? And then as this game's playing out and you kind of see, you know, Oregon had the game in hand, right? They're up 17-3, you know, blew that lead. And then the conversation kind of shifted, you know, between me, Femi, and Elliot of like, well, has Dan Lanning really won a big game too? Because, you know, I mean, they did have that super, super close game against Ohio State last year during the regular season that, you know, the Buckeyes probably should have won.
The late slide from Will Howard.
Right. Yeah. The late slide from Will Howard. I mean, then Ohio State gets revenge in the playoff. And, you know, yeah, they beat Penn State, but they gave up, as I mentioned, 300 rushing yards in that game. So then we kind of started to shift towards Dan Lanning, you know, and like, is this guy maybe for real? But I got to say, James Franklin found a way to fuck it up. He should have went for two when they scored in the fourth quarter to tie the game, because Oregon's defense was on the field a lot in the second half of this game, and specifically on that final drive. 15 plays, 62 yards, over 6.5 minutes. You've got arguably the best 1-2 running back punch in the nation in Allen and Singleton. Now, neither one of those guys were super effective in the game, but you still have them, right? You have to have a 2-point play dialed up if you're Andy Kotelnicki. And if Drew Aller is supposed to be a top half of the first round draft pick, and you've got those two running backs, You mean to tell me you don't have a 2-point play to go out there and win this game? Instead, you play for overtime, which is remarkably high variance in college football. And he got exactly the outcome that he deserved by losing the game. Like, Oregon was probably not going to get into field goal range. And frankly, I would trust any college kicker. I wouldn't trust any college kicker to kick from 50 plus. So if I'm Franklin, I go for two and I say, you know what? I'm either winning the game now or they got to beat me with some long field goal and they're probably not going to do it. And he didn't do it. He kicked the extra point. And then, you know, like I said, they got what they deserved in overtime. So I guess you could say that, you know, maybe you do play for the tie and you're at home and momentum and so on and so forth and all of that. But man, I play for the win. You have to be aggressive there. If you're Penn State at home, whiteout with the team that you have, and as you mentioned, all these guys coming back, like, take your chances to win the game on a 2-point play.
It's going to be fascinating to see how Penn State gets off the mat, not this weekend as they go out to the Rose Bowl, where I'm sure no one will be in attendance there for UCLA. I'm sure it will be Penn State fans, but you've got a back-to-back stretch of at Ohio State and home to Indiana. You split that, you're making the playoff. You get swept there, you're missing the playoff. So we'll see what Penn State does to respond as they have some big games still coming. And look, Iowa, I'm not going to say that Iowa will beat them, but they gave Indiana a bit of a test in an Iowa typical fashion there over the weekend. I did laugh. I saw my buddy Stucky over at the Action Network put out this tweet that made me laugh. Just been told by Penn State insiders, Koldelnicki saving all the good stuff for Ohio State.
I got to ask, just because, I mean, I don't want to put the cart in front of the horse here because I'm sure you're going to talk about this game a little bit later. But so the one thing we do know about James Franklin, he's really, really good in the bully role. Extremely good in the bully role. When they're supposed to blow somebody out, they do it for the most part. 25.5-point road favorite, traveling to the Rose Bowl cross country after that. Like, I know you're a big situational spot player. Are you taking a side in that game between Penn State and UCLA?
Well, what's been interesting this year, and I just tweeted this out, at one Tim Murray, you can follow Adam at Skating Tripods. Penn State's 0-4 ATS. And I know there was the crazy backdoor cover situation with Villanova, but you know, they kind of just played with their food. Three of the preseason top five teams, Adam, are 0-4 ATS. Penn State, Clemson, and Georgia, all winless against the spread. So I will say this, going back to last year, Ohio State, of course, beats Penn State in the big game, and Penn State doesn't give the ball to Tyler Warren on first and goal from the one. Penn State did respond and beat Washington by 29 the following week. So I don't know what UCLA is going to be the rest of the year. We talked about it on the podcast. I bet an adjusted win total under 1.5 when Deshaun Foster was fired at +135 at DraftKings. And they made a little sweaty this weekend. They got the cover against Northwestern, UCLA did. But I think, Adam, if I had to play it, there's a part of me that says, is Penn State, you know, down in the dumps? But there's also this part of me that says, they're going to go out there, like you said, and play the role of bully. So I think I would be Penn State or pass in this spot, you know, if I had to play this game at UCLA.
Well, you like ugly dogs, so that's why I asked.
I know.
And if you're liking Penn State,
those ugly
there,
dogs weren't barking this weekend. Good God. Florida Atlantic was down 5 in the fourth quarter and somehow lost by 29.
Dude, I don't know what's going on with that program. Like, you and I both like Zach Kittley.
Yeah.
And I thought Tom Herman was a decent hire. I mean, you know, was the head coach at Texas, was the OC at Ohio State. Like, he's been at some pretty premier programs, and obviously that didn't work out. The only person who's been able to win in Boca is Lane Kiffin. Or I don't know, maybe the Grim Reaper too, being in Boca. But, you know, I don't know, man. Like, Lane Kiffin's the only person who's had any success there with the Owls.
That's a line right there. Maybe the Grim Reaper too. I was just looking back. Utah State got us a backdoor cover. I thought Vanderbilt was never going to stop scoring, so that was very worrisome there as Diego Pavia was in the game with like 9 minutes to go in the fourth quarter with Alabama on deck. Then you got another ugly dog I played. Well, NIU was ugly because they just didn't score points, and that might have been the worst college football game I've ever watched in my life, Adam. 6-3, that was excruciatingly painful and to end up with a losing ticket at the end of the day too. So that was pretty ugly. But what wasn't ugly was Alabama and Georgia. I know the second half got pretty pretty physical and not a lot of points, but man, Ty Simpson kind of validating my preseason expectations of this Alabama team. They go out, they lay the egg week one, as we all know. But Adam, they hold on, they get the win. And I was beyond impressed by Ty Simpson. And I was keeping an eye. There are a few national shops, DraftKings, FanDuel, that keep Heisman odds up during games. And during the game, after I think the first touchdown drive that Ty Simpson and Alabama had, I want to say he was 17-1 to win the Heisman. And I felt to myself, I think I should just go in and take a little piece of that. He's now, what, around 8 or 9 to 1 to win the Heisman in what feels like it's completely wide open right now, especially with the John Mateer injury. But what did you make of Alabama and Georgia? What was interesting to note, Bill Conley over at ESPN, and he does SP Plus, he had this as Alabama 19.6% post-game win expectancy. I could see it being 50-50, maybe 60-40. That seems a bit aggressive because I thought the first half Alabama was by far the better team on the road in Athens.
Yeah, you know, Alabama got off to a really good start. I mean, you know, keep in mind that when you talk about S&P win probability and win expectation and, you know, some of the other things that are out there, I mean, a lot of it is EPA driven, right? So Georgia had 7 explosive plays. Their 13% explosive play rate was in the 92nd percentile, according to Game on Paper. They had 6.7 yards per play. They had the explosive runs. What they didn't get was much of a game out of Gunnar Stockton, who was just 13 of 20 for 130 yards. They had almost 7 yards per carry, though. So you can kind of see why, you know, it felt like because Georgia had the explosives that, you know, it was going to kind of be their game. But look, I'm trying to remember. I know at one point in the first half, Alabama was 7 for 7 on third down. They wound up being 13 of 19 on third down in this game, while Georgia was 2 for 8. So yeah, Georgia had some early down success, had some explosive plays, but Alabama just leaned on them all game long, had the ball for 35, 36, ran 24 more offensive plays from scrimmage. Like, I get that it wasn't as flashy as what Georgia was able to do from a yards per play standpoint, but this is why the context of the box score is just so important. I mean, Alabama had 7.7 plays per drive. Georgia had 5.3. So Alabama just stayed on the field. You know, yeah, maybe they didn't get a bunch of explosives, but they just stayed on the field. And Simpson made a lot of good reads, a lot of really good NFL quality types of throws. Gunnar Stockton had maybe 1 or 2 of those. And yeah, I give a lot of credit to Kalen DeBoer. I know things got dicey there, but Kalen DeBoer, Kane Womack, massive turnaround for this team from what we saw in week 1 against Florida State. So I give them a lot of credit for that. And honestly, I mean, I get that Georgia, you know, had a couple of explosives in the running game, but I was not impressed with Georgia on the whole. I mean, their defensive line got virtually no push whatsoever. They had, you know, just 1 sack, 4 tackles for loss. Like, Georgia didn't look like Georgia. And I just feel like maybe the year-over-year attrition with the NFL draft has finally gotten to this team.
Georgia, this stat's pretty wild. Kirby Smart is 1-7 against Alabama, the lone win coming in the national championship game, which Alabama fans will tell you if Jameson Williams doesn't get hurt, they probably win that game. But whatever, he did get hurt and Georgia won the game. Against everybody else, 107-13. That's a pretty wild split there for Kirby Smart against Alabama. So let's get into your power ratings article as we look ahead to this upcoming week a little bit. And let's hit on a little stock up first. And it's kind of all over the place, some eclectic teams, if you will. But let's go with James Madison. This team is one that certainly could represent the group of 5 in the New Year's 6 or in the college football playoff. But Memphis would be the favorite right now, and they are betting wise. They're plus 450. But the Dukes have been pretty darn impressive. They do have a loss to Louisville on their ledger, which hurts them if they're looking ahead to the playoff. But in the Sun Belt, this is a team that is the betting favorite to win that conference. What have you done with the Dukes?
Yeah, 4-point upgrade for James Madison here. And look, I mean, it doesn't matter what I say, but I would have James Madison a 2-point favorite on a neutral against Memphis. So, I mean, I know that they have that loss to Louisville, and so that's going to be really problematic. But, you know, look, to some degree, you could look at last season for the Dukes and say, you know what, there was a decent amount of Kurt Cignetti talent left over. And certainly, you know, kind of the impression that he made on this program kind of left over. So you're sort of thinking about it with Bob Chesney and you're like, hey, you know what? Did he just ride the wave kind of Cignetti with the Dukes having a pretty successful season last year? And then this year they look fantastic. So Bob Chesney, just really good head coach. James Madison finds good head coaches. And I hate to say this, but the athletic department's going to have to find another good head coach for next season, because Chesney's going to go somewhere. You know, as you mentioned, we already have four Power Four head coaches gone. As you mentioned before we started recording here, there's going to be several more. So Chesney will not be with James Madison long. But for now, I really, really like a lot of things about this football team.
Yeah, I think if you're Virginia Tech, your first call is probably to the prodigal son, Shane Beamer. And if he stays, then, yeah, you got to look long and hard just down the road to James Madison. Hell, it's like on the same highway. I think it's, what, 81? The joke is that Virginia Tech folks always say that James Madison people just get off the highway early. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what ultimately happens. But I agree, Bob Chesney, very good coach. And how about the fired coach bump, by the way, for the old Hokies getting a win over NC State this past weekend. So impressive to see them beat NC State over the weekend. So got the old fired coach bump. You get rid of Virginia Tech's coach, and now they're 2-0 since they've done that.
I like how you didn't say Brent Pry, because you were afraid of mentioning Brent Key again.
I know. I specifically held off on that because I was like, I always mess those two up. So I don't want to put the wrong name out there.
I mean, look, you know, Vatek outright win. Oklahoma State found a way to stay within the number against Baylor. You know, UCLA goes on the road, covers against Northwestern. I didn't have Oklahoma State, but I did have UCLA in that one against Northwestern because, yep. I don't know, Northwestern laying a touchdown against any team with kind of a pulse feels weird. But yeah, the head coach bump was a thing. So we'll see if those teams are able to sustain that though for another week or more.
Well, Arkansas will have 2 weeks to prepare for Tennessee, and they've pretty much fired everybody that had any hand on the defense, as Sam Pittman obviously was let go, but also Travis Williams, the defensive coordinator, Marcus Woodson, the co-defensive coordinator, and the D-line coach as well. So old neck brace Bobby is back, baby, there in the land of Woo Pig Suey, because, you know, I was nervous about the game, and the props that I played ultimately got there, but I think I was a bit fortunate. Notre Dame, man, offensively, Adam, that is one of the best Notre Dame teams I've seen from an offensive standpoint, maybe it's since Brady Quinn. I know the 2015 team was pretty good offensively, but this team offensively, they've got so many weapons. And we'll see what they do this weekend against Boise State. They're now up to a 19.5-point favorite. But, yeah, that was pretty eye-opening. I expected Notre Dame to score, but, man, Arkansas looked just completely done midway through that first half.
Yeah, I'll get back to this in a second. I dropped Arkansas 3 points. But speaking of App State, I dropped them 4 points. This is the lowest I've had them in terms of my power ratings. Dowell Loggins is not working there. In Boone. Random game in Boone this week. I'm sure we'll talk about this one a little bit later on in the show. But, you know, for Arkansas, so I want to get your thoughts on this. And like, maybe this is more of a sports talk radio kind of discussion, but I do think it leaks over into betting, you know, quite a bit. So Petrino takes over, right? Fires the DC, fires the two defensive assistants. Like, what do you make of this whole situation? Because to me, those types of moves scream not only angling for the head coaching job,
yeah,
but also for the athletic department to agree to them. Like, are they not even going to do a coaching search? And is this just Bobby P's gig?
I don't think it's Bobby P's gig, but I wouldn't be surprised if he earned it. And you think back to, obviously, all the pictures that we get to enjoy of the neck brace and all of that from his time from 08 to 2011. But at this point, Arkansas fans, I mean, they already welcomed him back, right, as the offensive coordinator. And these were Colin Wilson's words, who knows the program very well, has been on this podcast and was on my show on Saturday. But he essentially said, Sam Pittman was told, you're hiring Bobby Petrino as your offensive coordinator. So it's not surprising that this is where we're at. But I did see Bruce Feldman, who is as piped in as anybody when it comes to coaching searches. Rhett Lashley is the name that I think a lot of big money people down there in Arkansas are interested to go get, as, of course, he's the head coach of SMU, a guy who played quarterback at Arkansas, was on their staff for a little bit. So there's ties there. But yeah, it would be, it's got to be fascinating to see if Arkansas can put together some wins here, if there's going to be pressure for Arkansas to keep Bobby Petrino. The schedule is, looks out this way. So they got a bye this week. Then it's at Tennessee, home to A&M, home to Auburn, home to Mississippi State, at LSU, at Texas, and then you wrap up against Missouri. So not an easy schedule, but you could argue some winnable games, Adam, at home against Mississippi State, at home against Auburn. So we'll see how it all plays out there. But not surprised to see Sam Pittman was handed the pink sheet there. But yeah, we'll see. Look, Bobby Petrino's had success down there before, so it wouldn't stun me if they found ways to be successful down there.
Okay, so I think we're both going to agree that Arkansas is a better job than SMU, but, and I know that Rhett Lashley is deeply tied to that program. Is that a job that you want right now? Because in the SEC, to make the college football playoff, it's virtually impossible if you're a middle-of-the-road program like Arkansas, right? Unless you just get really, really lucky and all of a sudden you're going to find, you know, just complete standouts at a lot of key positions. Like, it's going to be very, very hard to do. I mean, SMU made the college football playoff out of the ACC last year. Like, I don't know. I mean, does Lashley leave for that job? Because, I mean, you're in the Dallas area, right, with SMU. There's plenty of money to go around there. Just keeps continuing to grow that area. You know, obviously, from a recruiting standpoint, you've got a ton of talented high school football players in Texas. I don't know if Lashley... I mean, probably because of the deep emotional ties, he would take it, but I don't know that it's, I don't know that it's a better place for him to be necessarily.
Well, the path to the playoff, as we saw last year, is certainly more obtainable,
right,
from SMU. And financially, I mean, SMU basically told the ACC, we don't want your money. We just want to be in your conference. And so they're doing fine financially. You know, obviously Arkansas's got their fair share of cash with, I don't know if you folks are watching the game, there's a little symbol on the field there. What's that? Oh, the Walmart symbol. Yeah. So they got a little bit of money, got some Tyson Chicken money as well. So they got some cash down there, but a lot of that's also being spent on basketball. And we talked about this, I think, last week, which is they're a school that wants to win at a high level in three big sports. They want to win in baseball, basketball, and football. Now, baseball is not going to be the same financial investment, but they're really good at baseball, and they spend a lot of money on baseball, and they pack their stadium quite a bit. So, yeah, I mean, I can't speak to how he thinks about his alma mater and the ties and all of that. That's obviously a unique situation. But, yeah, if you're Arkansas, you see what Bobby Petrino can do if he can rekindle some of that magic from, 08 to 2011, and then – if it doesn't work, then you go try to make Rhett Lashley come home and be your head coach there. So Arkansas, one of the teams that you brought down. Let's stay in the SEC with your stock report, which you can read over at VSiN.com. Let's hit on LSU. 24-19 loss. I talked to my neighbor, is a huge LSU fan, and he was giving me a couple jabs after the Irish lost the first two games of the season. I said, all right, don't worry. Your time's coming with Brian Kelly. And sure enough, as a slight underdog, BK and company couldn't get it done. You know, it's funny. We keep looking back and doing the revisionist history where a team like Alabama, okay, maybe the Florida State game was a blip on the radar to lose that game. Or Florida State wasn't as bad as what they showed on Friday night in Charlottesville. LSU, when you look back to their results so far, Adam, and then we look at the performance on Saturday, this LSU team has a lot of questions, and offensively, man, there's a lot to be desired.
Yeah, there really is. I was trying to look up Brian Kelly's buyout as you were talking there. It's probably around $60 million. So I don't really think LSU is going to be making a change, although I don't think it's a bad idea. I mean, you know, you've got Garrett Nussmeier, who was, you know, co-favorite, second favorite to win the Heisman Trophy, and he looks like he's regressing this season. I mean, this is not a good LSU team. Keep in mind, they had the 5 interceptions against Florida a couple of weeks ago and only scored 20 points in that game. Like, they're not good. And this is one of those games, you know, I talk all the time about box score study and how that's a big factor in my power ratings and the adjustments that I make and all of that. Like, I get that this game says it was a 24-19 final score. Ole Miss dominated this football game. I mean, they outgained them by more than 200 yards, about 230 yards. LSU really did nothing. 2 of 11 on third down. Like, they didn't do anything on offense in this game. Ole Miss left some points on the field. This was an unacceptable performance for LSU, and I think more unacceptable performances are coming. I don't think that Brian Kelly is a good fit there. I don't think he's a good fit for the types of players that they're trying to recruit. I don't think that he's a good fit in a program where, you know, every Saturday seems like it's a big game. You know, at least at Notre Dame, you kind of get, you know, so there'll be years where like a Stanford's not very good, or, you know, you're much better than the Service Academy teams or something like that. But like, you don't really get that at LSU. I mean, they should have lost to South Carolina last year in a game that the Gamecocks were completely robbed. Like, LSU is not in a good place right now. And if you can't do well on offense with Garrett Nussmeier, like, who can you do well with?
Well, on the flip side, Ole Miss, man, they've got themselves a quarterback. And, you know, the circumstances that get there were unfortunate with Austin Simmons getting hurt. But you can't go away from Trinidad Chambliss right now. Trinidad Chambliss, he's now 16-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. I mentioned it's wide open right now. But a dude that was playing Division II football a year ago is now the sixth shot to win the Heisman Trophy. And I know he's not the biggest dude, and maybe that's the reason why he had to go to, you know, Division II Ferris State. But this guy is the real deal, and he's a lot of fun to watch. I know I'm sure Ole Miss fans or Ole Miss backers were not thrilled that he went out of bounds there. But guess what happened? Ultimately, he made the play, and cinched the game for Ole Miss. He is a lot of fun to watch. And this Ole Miss team, I know there was a lot of hype around them last year, and you still have got games at Georgia, at Oklahoma, but we saw it a year ago. Ole Miss was allowed 2 mulligans, and they used 3. If they can avoid that bad loss, Adam, look at their schedule. They've got a bye week, then they play Wazoo, at Georgia, at Oklahoma. I'll let you lose both of those games. If this team's 10-2 with a home win over South Carolina down the stretch, Ole Miss is going to be in the playoff. And this is I like what I've seen from Ole Miss so far this year. This is impressive. You know, they haven't really blown out SEC teams, but they've gotten it done. And now if they can avoid, you know, a loss like they had last year to Kentucky, then they should be in the playoff at worst at 10-2.
You know what? I agree with what you're saying, but at the same time, I kind of like plus 140, plus 145 no when it comes to the college football playoff. I mean, again, you're talking about a situation. They completely dominated that game against LSU. They won by 5. They gave up 526 yards to Arkansas. Won that game by 6. Like, they're not good defensively, which I think is certainly a problem. And, I mean, I guess this kind of depends on what your thoughts are about Georgia coming out of that game against Alabama. But, I don't know. I just feel like, no matter how gaudy the statistics are, no matter how impressive this team looks on offense, like, the defense is going to cost them a game at some point. This is not, you know, what was it, the Land Sharks defense that they were a few years ago? Like, they are leaky. They have holes. I think, you know, what they did to LSU's offense is more of an indictment on where the Tigers are than where the Rebels' defense is. So, I don't think they're completely out of the woods yet by any means. And I kind of like the plus 140 not to make the playoff. Now, obviously, you could maybe get a better price on that after they hammer Washington State this week or in 2 weeks, because they do have the bye this week. And there probably will be some carnage, you know, by the time that they play their next real opponent when they play Georgia. So this number probably gets a little bit better. But I'm kind of looking towards the no to make the college football playoff, because there's going to be something that happens in a game that they shouldn't lose. Like, maybe they lose the Egg Bowl to a Mississippi State team that looks really, really improved this season. If you lose the Egg Bowl along with one of those two, you know, top 15 games, I don't know if they get into 10-2 at that point.
Well, yeah, I would say that. I mean, look, they have back-to-back games against Georgia and Oklahoma that I mentioned in October. Will Mateer be back for that game against Oklahoma? I don't know. Based off of the reporting this past weekend, he might be there in Red River. Who the hell knows? But I think you make a fair point about Mississippi State. I mean, Mississippi State right now, they don't get the win, but they get the cover. They're one of four teams, 5-0 ATS this year. So Mississippi State has been impressive this year. And as you pointed out, vastly improved from a year ago. And, you know, it's, you know, they're 4-1 with an overtime loss to Tennessee. Looking at the remaining schedule, they're going to be scratching and clawing to try to get the bowl eligibility. They get Arkansas, but it's on the road. So we'll see how it ultimately plays out. Before we take a break, I did want to circle back to some of the teams that you upgraded quite a bit. We head on James Madison. Let's go to New Mexico, because this is a team that I don't think many of us knew what to expect from them. Bronco Mendenhall leaves to go to Utah State. Speaking of unbeaten teams against this spread, Utah State, after they get the backdoor cover against Vandy, is now 5-0 ATS. But New Mexico, this is a team that, what, had 70-some-odd transfers. And Jason Eck is a guy that, you know, Wisconsin, I'm sure they're going to try to get Lance Leipold or someone like that. Eck is a Wisconsin guy, and I'm not sure that he's ready for Wisconsin, but man, it wouldn't be a terrible hire if you're the Badgers based off of what he's doing in a very short sample down in Albuquerque.
Yeah, they were the biggest adjustment up for me, a five-point move here on the Lobos. And look, I mean, Idaho transfer Jack Lane's playing really, really well at quarterback. They're doing just enough in the running game to, you know, be able to salt some games away. This one actually really pissed me off, because I was on New Mexico State plus the 14 in this one. Up 17-14 at half, like, feels like it's going pretty well, feels like everything's going to be okay. And then all of a sudden, like, they gave up three straight touchdown drives in the second half. And I'm just like, all right, well, you know, I guess I have to make a big power ratings adjustment here, which is, you know, precisely what I did in this one. So, you know, I moved New Mexico up. I moved New Mexico State down, kind of got closer to what the market seems to think. You know, and this is the thing, right? You know, I mean, the 35-10 win at UCLA, the one that ultimately got Deshaun Foster fired. Like, you look at that and you're like, okay, well, UCLA has just quit, right? And then UCLA goes on the road, covers against Northwestern. And you start thinking, maybe New Mexico's win was pretty good. And then, of course, they beat their rival and cover the number in that one. So it's also important to pay attention to how data points are aging. Because now you look at New Mexico and you go, all right, there is something to that UCLA win. They were pretty competitive against Michigan. Like, maybe this is a better team than I gave them credit for. So you want to be doing that, too. Not only adjusting on a week-to-week basis, whether you're making power ratings or just adjust your mentality and your mindset on a team, but also look at their previous data points and see how they're aging. You know, like we talked about with LSU last week, their data points are not aging particularly well. Well, and they go out there and lose to Ole Miss. So keep an eye on that too. Make sure that you're kind of taking stock in what happened earlier and if it's kind of reflective of where the team's direction is going.
Curious about the game on Friday night. San Jose State is a 2.5-point favorite at home against New Mexico. And San Jose State, that's a rough loss, man. They were able to put up a ton of yards on Stanford. Walker Egitt threw for, what, 473? And they end up blowing that one, and Stanford gets the win. Stanford, I think, kicked a field goal, scored a touchdown with 19 seconds to go to take the lead. They were trailing by 8 with 7.5 minutes to go in that one. So, you know, like you said, I'm a big situational guy. How does San Jose State bounce back? They haven't lost a conference game yet, but that's a team that I was expecting much bigger things from this year. And, you know, to lose to Central Michigan to start the season, then to lose to Stanford. Now you're a 2.5-point favorite at home against a team that seems to be on the rise. That's going to be an interesting spot on Friday night, New Mexico at San Jose State.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, also, again, New Mexico team that just beat their rival, you know, so that's sure. always a nice little bump for a program, too. Before we hit the break, I want to mention a few other teams I moved up. I was on Wake Forest plus 14. They should have beaten Georgia Tech outright.
Yep.
But they looked really good for the majority of that game. They finally figured out how to get the ball in Damon Claiborne's hands and have some holes for him. This is a Wake Forest team that played three games in 13 days to open the season with a first-year head coach in Jake Dickert. Obviously, new coordinators, a lot of new faces, all that kind of thing. I thought it was a great spot for them coming off the bye. A Georgia Tech team that's probably a little bit overrated, a little bit overhyped at this point in time. Wake Forest looked really, really good. Obviously, they didn't win the game outright, but they covered very comfortably in that one. I like Scotty Hazleton as a DC, so I give them a 3.5-point bump. Arizona got a 3-point bump for me. Another one where the final score not really indicative of how the game was played. They beat TCU 27-24. They outgained them by 229 Arizona yards. State. Arizona State, excuse me. Yeah, Arizona State outgained TCU by 229 yards in that game. So I gave Arizona State a nice bump. Kenny Dillingham has his team going in the right direction. And one team very, very far off the radar here, but I think they're in severe trouble. Missouri State. So first-year FBS team, they are a very pass-happy offense. Their starting quarterback, Jacob Clark, went down in the game last week. He was on the sideline in crutches, had a giant knee brace on, didn't look good at all. I think that they kind of thought it was a concussion at first, but it wound up being a lower body injury. Missouri State's going to be in trouble without him. They have a kid, undersized kid, like a redshirt freshman, something like that, who came in at quarterback. Bailey is his last name. Missouri State's going to be in trouble. It's not a good conference at all, Conference USA, but I think Missouri State's going to have a lot of problems if Clark is indeed out long-term.
Just a reminder, folks, this broadcast of the VSiN College Football Betting is brought to you by our friends at Rainbow Authentics, the official source of game-used apparel, autographs, trading cards for your favorite Hawaii student-athletes. Every item tells a story, whether it's game-worn jerseys, a signed ball, or unique collectibles. You're capturing the moment and owning a piece of Hawaii sports history. Beyond memorabilia, Rainbow Authentics is committed to supporting the community. Their mission is rooted in empowering student athletes and coaches, strengthening local programs, and giving back to Hawaii with pride. With exclusive custom gear like the hat that I'm wearing here, had someone today at Costco ask me about my hat that I'm wearing. I get asked all the time about this hat. Rainbow Authentics also makes you look your best every single game day. So check them out. RainbowAuthentics.com. Mahalo to our friends, Rainbow Authentics, a proud sponsor of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. And I'll put my hand up. I was wrong. I thought that was going to be a really tough spot for Hawaii. Six straight game, Adam, heading to Elevation, taking on Air Force. The market agreed. It touched 7, and Hawaii gets a 44-35 win. That Air Force defense is really bad, and we'll see how it fares in a rivalry game this week against Navy. But Air Force can score, but they can't stop anybody.
No, they can't. They can definitely score, though. Liam Zarka, I think we talked about this last week on the show. You know, he took over at quarterback, and like all of a sudden Air Force has a passing attack, which is pretty interesting. But you know, there's a couple of things here about this game. The first is that we've seen some Navy money come in, kind of a little bit of a move from 11 to 11.5. You know, I mean, it's not a significant move, but when you talk about it in correlation with the total coming down in this game, where, you know, one sports book in the US, a very popular one, opened this total as high as 58.5.
Crazy.
Down to 49.5 now, 49 in some places. But to see Navy money coming in when they couldn't cover 14 against Rice last week, no, I'm not bitter about that or anything. Like, to me, that really points to how bad this Air Force defense is. So a line to keep an eye on for the first game of the Commander-in-Chief's Trophy Series this weekend.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll do a little overreaction, market correction, and take a look at some early lines that we have either bet or are looking to bet. Quick break. It's the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. That's Adam Burke. I'm Tim Murray. Adam, before we move any further, you are the managing editor of our website, VSiN.com. A whole lot going on, so let us know what's the latest over at the website and how people can get access to everything we've got going on.
Well, a whole lot going on is an understatement, because over the last 18 hours or so, I've written not only my look ahead at the NFL and college football weeks, but also my four wildcard series previews. Major League Baseball playoffs starting on Tuesday. Wildcard series is going Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Then we get to the division series coming up this weekend. So Major League Baseball playoffs, definitely a big deal. NHL team previews are posted over there for all 32 teams. NBA betting guide comes out Tuesday, October 7th, which is also coincidentally opening night for the NHL. So Jonathan Davis's daily NHL article will be back, but we'll also get the NBA betting guide on October 7th, college basketball betting guide October 23rd. So we are super busy over there at vsin.com, and you can pick your offer. You know, we got our $9.99 intro offer. Check us out for a month. We've got our 40% off the football special. And also here coming up soon, we'll be doing our Sports Equinox special offer, because the Sports Equinox this year is October 27th, where all the major sports, North American sports, are in action. So we do a special subscription promo for that. So lots of stuff happening, man. Lots of moving parts over there at vsin.com.
All right, let's wrap up the podcast. I want to run through this a little bit. The look ahead line versus current market. So I've been doing this every week so far this year, Adam, where DraftKings on Wednesday usually puts out some look ahead lines. I think FanDuel does it as well, but I just grab them from DraftKings. And then I compare it to where the market's at on the Monday after that particular weekend unfolds. Some of these games didn't really move. Looking at a game like Clemson, North Carolina, not really big move there. Clemson 13.5 last week, now out to 14. Biggest movers we saw, let's get to Texas Tech, Houston. Houston, very fortunate to come back and beat Oregon State late on Friday night. And of course, we saw Texas Tech absolutely dismantle Utah. So this is one of the biggest movers. Texas Tech look ahead was 8.5, and now it's 11.5. This game is at Houston on Saturday. Is this an overreaction or a market correction?
You know, I always like games like this, right? Because, you know, you have one team who has a data point from just a couple of days ago, and you have one team that hasn't played in a while. And the team that hasn't played in a while, their last data point was thoroughly impressive with what they did, taking on Utah, going out on the road, playing a really, really good fourth quarter in that one. But to your point, you know, Parker Fleming, a guy who I know you've had on your show on various things. If you look at net success rate for week five with his chart at StatsOWAR on Twitter, Houston was the most fortunate team in the country to win last week based on the net success rate against Oregon State. And Oregon State is not a very good football team. So this one makes some sense. I mean, Houston is getting better, I think, with Willie Fritz, but last week was not a great data point for them. Texas Tech off a bye. I don't know if it'll be Baron Morton or Will Hammond. I don't know if you've seen the answer to that question or not. I split the difference. I have Texas Tech minus 10 in my power ratings, but I mean, is Texas Tech just a wagon, right? I mean, their transfer portal ranking has been great. The incoming freshman rankings have been great the last couple of years. Like, maybe all of this is just coming together for the Red Raiders.
It's certainly possible. I could see myself, when we have the Thursday podcast, being on Houston. So that's one that I'm going to look at here. Willie Fritz in that big dog role, especially at home, could be a spot there. But you're right. I mean, Texas Tech, they blew me away with the performance we saw in Salt Lake. And then look how Utah responded. I know West Virginia is all sorts of beat up at every single position, but they went there and they dominated West Virginia. I played the under, and that thing was a dead over. All throughout that game. Another big move, Boise State at Notre Dame. You know, this is a game, Adam, where preseason, I was looking at the schedule. I thought preseason Notre Dame would probably split Miami and Texas A&M. Obviously, they lost both of those. I thought Arkansas could be tricky. That ended up not being the case. And then you got Boise State. I do think Notre Dame will be focused on this game, Adam, but we know their defense, Notre Dame's, has not been great. Boise State goes from a 15.5 point dog last week now to a 19.5 point dog. And I would assume that a lot of that has to do with the prolific nature of the Notre Dame offense right now. What do you make of this one? Is this a overreaction or a market correction to Notre Dame Boise State?
I think to some degree, This is a market correction. I do have it Notre Dame minus 15. So I was definitely closer to what the look ahead line was last week. But when you look at the two actual offenses that Boise State has faced, gave up 34 to South Florida, were never competitive in that game. I guess calling Air Force an actual offense is maybe a little bit nice. But again, with Liam Zarka, they're definitely a different team because they actually have a throwing component now. And Air Force had 37 points in that game. Zarka threw for 246. Air Force had over 500 yards. Like, I mean, this is one where I don't see Notre Dame's offense getting stopped. And I think that's the reason why, you know, we've seen this adjusted line here. The question is just, can Notre Dame's defense get enough stops to cover this big of a number?
Yeah, and I think that's the question. And Notre Dame simplified things last week. And, you know, I thought watching that game, Adam, they gave up a few explosives early. Omega Blake had like a 35, 40-yard reception on the Arkansas opening drive. But then Notre Dame kind of tightened up and ultimately held them to a field goal on that opening drive. So, you know, I heard my buddy Pete Sampson on his podcast talk about maybe the best defense is Notre Dame's offense. And if they just keep putting the pressure on the other side, do they end up feeling that and making mistakes? But we'll see. I'm not going to be laying 19.5. And I'll say this, Boise State historically shows up for these games, right? This is their Super Bowl. They're not playing Oregon this year. This is their big opportunity on national television to make a statement. Look, Ashton Gentry's not walking through that door. Maddox Madsen has to do a little bit more now, but they do have some decent running backs. I've been impressed by what I saw, and we already talked about it, dismantled App State. So I think this is a little bit of an overreaction, but Marcus Freeman, I'll say this, he is, I believe, still the best covering coach in college football since he became the head coach of Notre Dame. So they have been covering numbers, and especially last year, when you look back to when they lost the Northern Illinois game, they kind of started destroying teams, and maybe that started last week. What do we make of
Van? Let me ask you this real quick about Notre Dame, especially since you're pretty plugged in for the most part. So 3-point loss at Miami is probably going to age pretty well, to be honest with you, right? I mean, if Miami wins this week over Florida State, they're in the college football playoff. Their smallest favorite role, I think, is 9.5 for me the rest of the way. Every other game is 15 plus. So they're going to be a playoff team, right? Close loss to Texas A&M, game that could have really gone either way. Is Marcus Freeman thinking style points now?
I think so.
Can Notre Dame get in the playoff at 10-2? You know, with people kind of going, okay, well, first of all, they're a massive brand, right? That helps. We know it's all about dollar signs with the playoff. Also, if they rattle off 10 in a row, right, as last year's national runner-up, did they get the benefit of the doubt? I think there's a case to be made, especially since if their two losses are by 4 combined points. Like, Marcus Freeman has an offense to keep the throttle down. Like, they may be in blowout mode the rest of the way as often as they can be.
Well, I think there's a lot of people listening right now, and I would understand your argument, because especially with USC losing to Illinois over the weekend, Notre Dame probably, if they do run the table, is not going to have a win over a ranked team. So
no,
they're going to have a good loss to Miami, who could be number one at the end of the day if they run the table and go 13-0. And then who knows what Texas A&M will look like. That was a good win for Notre Dame, I guess, against Texas A&M. So I think it's going to be the weighing of how it ultimately plays out. But I think the answer to your original question is, does Notre Dame run it up? I think they do. And I think you saw that last week against Arkansas, and I think they have the capabilities of doing that. And I'm not trying to compare this offense to 2023 LSU, but you got to remember who was calling the plays when Jaden Daniels had no defense. It was Mike Denbrock. And he kind of feels like he's in his bag right now with a quarterback that he trusts, I think, thinking back to last year, it took him a little while to realize Riley Leonard was much better just bulldozing people than throwing the football. And right now they could be incredibly balanced. And, you know, Jadarian Price and Jeremiah Love are just, I think they're the best running back duo in the country, better than Nicholas Singleton and Catron Allen. And we'll see. But yeah, I think style points is certainly possible. I did look it up. Since 2022, Notre Dame is 30-14-2 ATS, and Oregon is second best at 29-16-1. So that is a big move for Notre Dame against Boise. But I will say Boise tends to show up pretty well in these spots. I did want to get to this one because College Game Day will be in Tuscaloosa, and not that big of a surprise, especially with Alabama's win. But then Vanderbilt continues to really impress. And Diego Pavia, as we all know, if you listen to this podcast, is an underdog god. They beat him last year, Vanderbilt did. The market was 13.5 in the look ahead, and it got as low as 9.5 earlier on Monday. It's back up to 10.5. Is this an overreaction or a market correction on Vanderbilt visiting Alabama and being a double digit underdog, excuse me, in a revenge spot for Alabama?
Man, this one's really, really tough. For what it's worth, from a power rating standpoint, I have Alabama minus 12.5. So I guess I could say overreaction. But man, Alabama coming off of that Georgia game, that was a very physical game at the point of attack for the most part. Game hanging there in the balance, very emotional win for Kalen DeBoer and his team. First really big test aced for Ty Simpson. But yeah, Diego Pavia is an underdog god, like you said, and so is Clark Lee, his head coach.
Yeah.
So I think it's a little bit of an overreaction, but you won't find me holding an Alabama ticket this week.
Vanderbilt since last year, 10-2 against the spread as an underdog. I mean, that's insane. The most wins or most covers by any team in the country as an underdog, Vanderbilt, 10-2.
Which is also hilarious. They scored 55 points last week and didn't cover as a favorite. So
we got that backdoor. Bronco knew that Bronco I had knew. It. So at least we got that working for us there. All right. Before we get out of here, Adam, any games jumping out to you, early bets that you placed? A couple that I did. Unfortunately, the number has moved, so I'm going to see if we can kind of get it back. I'm going to take Cal anytime they're a 3+ home dog, especially against Duke. Weird travel spot. I love my guy, Jaron Chiave Sangapulateli. This will be the Stormy special, so she'll be on the sideline there. She was there a couple weeks ago when they beat Minnesota, but it's back under 3 right now, so I would say wait. We might get a 3 to reemerge here. Duke, a very impressive performance against Syracuse over the weekend, just absolutely curb stomped the Orange. Much appreciated to Manny Diaz's squad to help out my win total on Syracuse under. So that was helpful. So that was one that jumped out to me. Any other games early week that initially popped out to you?
Yeah, I have Cal 1.5-point dog. So a little bit of line equity if this one's, you know, 3, 3.5, something like that. By the way, I just want to mention real quickly, Notre Dame is +140 at DraftKings to make the playoff, -165 on the no. So maybe some credence to the point we were talking about there about them trying to run it up. All right. So in terms of games that I'm looking at here, I fully understand this is not an ideal spot for Washington. It is very long travel going east to College Park, but I was pretty impressed with Washington's defense against Ohio State. Now, of course, Ryan Day was overly conservative as he usually is. But I thought they did an okay job on Jeremiah Smith, got burned on a middle screen, which was a phenomenal play call by Brian Hartline. But other than that, I was pretty impressed with Washington. And honestly, like, Washington will not see a defense like Ohio State's again the rest of the way. You know, Damon Williams was really good up until that game, and the Buckeyes just bottled him up. There were some, you know, coverage sacks, some coverage scrambles for short yards. Like, Ohio State's secondary was terrific. Maryland is not that same kind of team. So I took Washington -5.5. I have them a 9-point favorite in this game, so that's one that I took. Also, I took the 7 with Florida against Texas. Maybe Arch Manning's just not very good, right? And I've talked about this game a lot. Florida gave up 20 points to LSU in a game where DJ Lagway had 5 interceptions. Like, I don't know that their offense is going to play well, and frankly, they probably won't. But I think Florida's defense is legitimately very, very good. And Arch Manning is legitimately not very good. So I think Florida's going to cover this one. I do like them. And then lastly here, one other game that I took. I took the 2 touchdowns and a hook with Colorado +14.5 against TCU. I love Josh Hoover. I like TCU quite a bit, but Colorado's played well in 2 weeks since they went back to Caden Salter, and they played pretty well defensively in those 2 games too. So I took Colorado here +14.5.
Colorado, by the way, under Coach Prime, 10-5 ATS as an underdog, and they covered against BYU over the weekend. And that was one of the games, Adam, where I was, you know, running through Bill Conley's SP Plus post-game win expectancy. Once again, I try to take in all the information that's out there. BYU was a 30.1 post-game win expectancy in that game. So to your point about Colorado, I'm not a big Caden Salter guy. I was not impressed by his performance on Saturday night. Also, clock management for Coach Prime. My God, he called a timeout with like 6 minutes to go to punt the ball. I was like, his clock management, man, is something that needs to be studied. It is so bad, so bad. But yeah, as a big dog, he has profited certainly as well. So
I got a couple of games I want to ask you about here before we sign off.
Yep.
What would it take for me to interest you in betting over 38.5 for Miami and Northern Illinois? I mean, my God, the Northern Illinois offense like sets football back like six decades.
I watched a lot of that game, and you know, I had Northern Illinois.
You're a saint.
I loved the spot for San Diego State off a 34-0 win to go out to DeKalb to take on Northern Illinois. And while we had all of these enormous games going on in that 3:30 Eastern window, I had the four screens on normal games, and then I had NIU San Diego State on a side on my computer. And that was one of the most awful football games I've ever watched, and didn't even get me a cover from the Thursday podcast as well. So I'm not going to bet it just based off of I don't want to watch it because that was so painful. That all being said, I will say the betting market is on Miami. The betting market is out on NIU after back-to-back non-covers. I've bet them two straight weeks, Northern Illinois. Thomas Hammack as a dog has been amazing, and he has failed to cover the last 2 weeks against Mississippi State and then this past week against San Diego State. So I'm sure they'll probably win this game outright, Adam, because I'm staying off, but I can't do it anymore. No more Northern Illinois. That offense, to your point, is dreadfully bad.
3.12 yards per play in that game against San Diego State. I was just curious. I mean, again, I know that you like really, really ugly dogs. So
I do.
I wasn't sure if this was one that you were going to, take a look at or not. But this other game that I absolutely have to ask you about, just because I'm so curious to get your opinion on it. We just talked about Oregon State. We just talked about the fact that they should have beaten Houston. So Oregon State they're still orphaned, right? They don't have a conference affiliation. So their schedule is basically just filled out with anybody who was willing to play them. So they were just like, oh, you'll play us? Cool, let's do it. And in fact, they play Washington State twice, home and home here later on this season. So Oregon State's going to Boone, North Carolina this week, right? Highest elevation east of the Mississippi in college football. Don't know how many people know that, but it is actually a thing. That's why they're called Appalachian State, I guess. I cannot think of a more difficult travel spot going all the way east to Boone, North Carolina, which I'm sure is a very, very easy place to get to. And it's a 3:30 Eastern kick, so a 12:30 kick for them. They're going to have the time change and all that. I mean, God knows the last time they played a game in the Eastern time zone, let alone, you know, this far east. But Appalachian State is horrible. Anything you can do with this game? Because I actually have a play on it.
I saw your column. I can't bet Oregon State. That is just a horrendous spot, especially too when you add in the fact that they blew a 2-touchdown lead in the fourth quarter to Houston in a game they should have won. But I did find myself on App State on Saturday night, and my God, you're right. They are bad. They were held to 184 yards against Boise State. Boise State, they were, for like a minute, it looked like App State might stay in the cover window of 16.5, 17, and then they just put their foot down and absolutely blew them away. But that is one of the weirdest travel spots, weirdest situational spots. I don't know if I could get there with the Mountaineers, but God bless you betting Oregon State here.
I mean, you know me, right? I mean, I like to dig as deep as I possibly can. By the way, one other team I want to mention here. So they don't play this week because they play Thursday night against Kennesaw State coming up in a week and a half. So Louisiana Tech and UTEP. I just want to leave you with this, showing and illustrating the importance of studying box scores. Louisiana Tech beat UTEP 30-11. Okay. Mm-hmm. Sounds like it was a blowout, right? Sounds like it was a really good game for Louisiana Tech. They had 3.37 yards per play in this game. UTEP threw 5 interceptions. And I believe Louisiana Tech had 2 defensive touchdowns in that game to really widen the score. So just letting you know, I mean, obviously, you know, forcing turnovers is a skill. This is a good defensive team. It was a great defensive team last year. 2 pick sixes in the second half of that game for Louisiana Tech. But they had 3.4 yards per play, 1 by 19. So, again, I don't think UTEP's any good. In fact, they actually benched Malachi Nelson in this game. But just something for you to keep in mind, a little something for you to chew on with, you know, 2 teams that nobody cares about except for me.
Louisiana Tech, 5-0 ATS, best cover margin in college football at 15.4 points per game. So they...
And I'm going to bet Kennesaw State next Thursday night.
Well, there you go. That is on your radar. We'll talk more situational spots with Wes Reynolds, including Illinois off the big win, headed to West Lafayette. This number touched 11.5 over the weekend before the market came in on the Boilermakers. I think this is a very tough spot for Illinois. We'll talk more about that and other situational spots with Wes on Wednesday. But that's going to do it for the podcast this week. Once again, Adam has a boatload of content over on the website, vsin.com. Make sure you check it out and make sure you become a VSIN Pro subscriber. We've got a ton of different offers going on out there. We've got 3 episodes each and every week of the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast. Wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, we're up on YouTube as well now. So hit that like button on YouTube, subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star review. Really helps us out as we continue to climb up that Apple iTunes chart. For Adam Burke, I'm Tim Murray. We'll be back on Wednesday with Wes Reynolds and Brett Ciancia right here on the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.